Welcome to the Melrose Place podcast, where we rewatch, recap, and analyze every episode of the hit 90s TV series Melrose Place.
I'm Dan Hill.
And I'm Jenny Hill.
Let's get started. Episode 4, Grand Illusions. Not Grand Illusions, but Grand Delusions. Air date October 3rd, 1994. Let's kick it off.
Well, we go to our favorite nightmare scenario.
How come no one dreams in color?
Nobody dreams in color in Melrose Place.
It's all black and white.
It is, and it's all like this really shaky camera movement and like it's so surreal. And Michael is reliving the accident.
Yeah, he's flashback into the car accident, and it's coming close, and he gets there's a good shot of who's driving, and it's indistinguishable, and he just wakes up and he is dripping with sweat.
And of course, Kimberly comes to his aid. Are you okay, Michael? What's wrong?
And he's just like, I'm just trying to piece this thing together.
Kimberly is coaching him to be like, Michael, there are some things you just can't know. I think you need to just start accepting that this is permanent. You need to just get on with your life. You don't need to relive the past.
And then he just goes outside on the deck and he's like, look, there's something that's missing and I need to figure it out.
And we're not going anywhere. So that little transfer idea that Kimberly had, not going to happen in Michael's world.
Not going to happen. And then we roll into the credits. So I'm loving this new thing that they're doing with having this big scene at the beginning and then rolling into the regular episode, because we're getting amazing songs.
Dan just can't get enough of this like free domain music.
Oh my God.
He is sure to write down the lyrics every time.
They're such artsy tunes. This one, the lyrics go like this. I'm strong and I will rise above the damage you have done to me. Hey, there's nothing wrong with me. I don't have to feel more beautiful, girl. the more beautiful girl.
So that sets the tone of the next scene.
Yeah. And now we have just establishing shots of someone delivering a huge cube of papers.
And then for some reason, like tree trimmers, wood chipping a tree in the middle of the street.
Yeah, it's nowhere near Melrose.
Yeah, that's like in a private home. Don't know why we see that. It's kind of like the milkman scene from before.
And then Allison is just sitting in traffic in her beater. And then we cut to three kids in non-enclosed with no logos rolling a bike down the path.
And Dan, don't forget the garbage truck that goes past.
Right.
I swear they have like 7 shots of the exterior of Melrose Place, and they 4 out of the 7 include a garbage truck.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. They really enjoy that garbage truck.
They love that.
They've got an insider who knows the garbage routes. And
so we go to Amanda's apartment where she is reprimanding her father for just showing up and running away. And of course, Amanda likes to be above board and she's not very pleased with harboring a fugitive.
And Palmer doesn't give a fuck because he's right out, like out of the window, like just looking out. And he's like, "Oh, thank you, Amanda, for having me."
Yeah, and she's like closing curtains.
She rolls up. She's like, "What the fuck are you doing?
I almost got arrested for aiding and abetting you, Daddy. You can't be here." And Palmer's trying to play it really cool, like, "Oh, honey, don't worry. I'm gonna turn myself in. I just need a couple of days to tie up some loose ends, get some bank stuff squared away, and then I'm going right to the police department."
She says some pretty fucked up stuff to her dad. She says, "I'm glad you're alive, but I won't risk going to jail for you."
Well, I think that's pretty fair.
Yeah, but it's just very cold. And Palmer, did you already say this? Palmer's like, "I'm going to face the charges."
Well, yeah, he says he's going to turn himself in. And she's very skeptical about this. And he's like, "Look, Amanda, I'm facing 15 years in federal prison. Can I get just two free days here?" And Amanda says, "Okay, 2 days, that's it." And we're like, this is done.
15 years ain't so bad. White collar prison.
It ain't so good.
He's going to go to Richie White Guy prison.
He's probably in his late 60s, early 70s. I mean, that could be like sunset years.
He'll
like,
get out on good
that's
behavior.
That's his swan song, baby. He's done.
He'll get out on good behavior.
He might die in there.
Good behavior. It's well, not so bad.
Next.
All right. Let's say your dad came to you and he was a fugitive and he was like, "Jenny, I need to stay here for 2 days and then I'm out." You'd be like, "All right." Wouldn't you?
Duh.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. And she's just all like, "No, you can't. I don't
know.
Well,
she has a very different relationship with her dad, too. He lied to her, Daniel.
She was like obsessed with him. "Daddy. Oh, Daddy." She like loves him.
You cross her once, babe. You cross her once.
I guess so.
She writes you off.
So Jane and Sydney, we go to them. Sydney, she wakes up at Jane's place and she thinks that she slept through her alarm to get to work at Mancini Designs.
Yeah, so she's on the pullout couch. She's all frazzled, like, "Oh, Jane, I'm so sorry. I overslept. I'm going to get ready." And Jane is very calm and she says, "Actually, Sydney, this is, you know, your first day out of everything that you've been through. I think it's best that you take today off. You really get acclimated to your new life and we can formally start work tomorrow."
And she's so thankful. Jane, again, looking flawless. Can this style come back?
Really?
The tight shirt and then the
like it's like a bustier. It's like a vest, but it's cut more like a
and
like
it's
a corset.
Down.
It's like a corset.
Yeah, it's dope. I'm into it.
Okay.
Jenny, get ready. Christmas.
Let's go to the Renaissance Pleasure Fair. We can do a lot of that.
You're getting mad vests. Sydney is like, "Look, I really want to help you, but isn't this violating my probation?" And Jane's just like, "Meh, it's cool. We won't tell him.
Your probation officer doesn't need to know." But Sydney is very hung up on Michael. And she's like, "You know, I just want to like know what he's doing, what he's thinking." And Jane says, "Look, I was married to the guy for 5 years and he didn't remember who I was. He's not going to know who you are, Sydney." And Sydney is thinking out loud here. And she says, "Well, maybe if he only saw me, that might trigger something." And she trails off and it's kind of like, "Welp, we know she's going to go pay Michael a visit."
Straight to Michael's, man. So now we've got Allison, Billy, and Joe. We're at Allison's apartment and Billy is packing like he has 5 minutes to leave.
Yeah, he wants to get out of there. While Joe and Allison just have a casual conversation at the kitchen table. Now, of course, if you remember from last episode, Joe is really spooked about this being sued for custody by the Carters.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a scary thing. And really, it came out of left field because they were so welcoming and warm and wanting to be a part of the baby's life. And so she just feels very caught off guard. Allison suggests that maybe she should go pay them a visit and talk to them in person to cut out the whole lawyer thing because, you know, who has money to pay for lawyers?
Right. She's like, why don't you talk to them instead of hiring a lawyer? Like, bitch, you just hired a lawyer to, like, sue your dad. And now you're trying to go not use the law.
Well,
maybe she learned a lesson, like, sometimes the law is not...
Maybe I don't I think that this whole, this was a very aggressive thing that the Carters did. Mm-hmm. And I would be scared to face them by myself. But Joe thinks this is a good idea.
Yeah. And then Billy interrupts this whole conversation. He like slams this gift on the table. And he's like, "This is from Aunt Mickey. You'll have to return it."
And well, Billy, like, she's your aunt.
"You called off the wedding, so you return the gifts."
And ooh, props to Andrew Hsu here, because I was feeling him. Like, yeah. I could really feel his anger toward Allison. And usually he's just like a blank slate where it's mm-hmm. like, "Oh, choose your own adventure. What emotion am I feeling here?"
Yeah, we knew he was pissed. And I mean, do you think that's fair? If you called off the wedding, you have to return all the gifts?
I don't know. Even to your family? They only had 11 people at their whole wedding, so I don't think it's a lot of gifts.
Well, if people can't make it, they send gifts.
Okay, wait. So you're saying if you call off a wedding, do you think you need to return the gifts? Is that the question?
Yeah. Or that, and do you separate the gifts? Like, well, this is from your dad, so you have to return your dad's gift. This is from your aunt, so you have to return your aunt's gift. Or does one person, whoever calls it off, take send back them all?
You know, that's a great question. I think if you registered at the same store, you could just take all the items to Macy's and drop them off and return them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
True. True. So that relationship is donezo. No repair. Unlike the fucking boat life we're about to go to.
So Jake rolls up on the pretty lady, and there's Brittany just sunbathing, laying on the deck. And he's like, "Brittany, what part of find another place don't you understand?"
And she says, "I checked into a motel last night and it was gross."
And his response is, "Not everything is caviar and yachts."
Yeah. She claims that her husband, her scary husband, who she ran away from the day she met Jake, has seen her on Jake's boat. So now it's going to be dangerous on the boat.
Yeah. So Jake should probably stay away for at least 3 days.
Yeah. And yeah.
Very suspect.
She's like, "I'll watch the boat and you just stay away from it." And Jake's like, "I can't just leave the boat. This is a business."
And
I'm like, "What fucking business are you doing on this boat, Jake, other than fucking Brittany and living there? There's no business going on."
Did you also hear how she described her husband? She says, "He's very explosive."
Oh, yeah.
Little foreshadowing. Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, read between the lines, Jake. But Jake's not having it. He's just like, whatever. And Brittany's like, she's basically like, "Jake, I would hate to see you die, but I tried.
I tried." And she walks away and he's like, "Yeah, goodbye. See you later."
Yeah, and then she does this sad, like, walk, take a couple steps, turn around.
You really like this part?
Yeah, she turns around and then she just, like, throws her arms up like, "Oh, well, you're dead." Like, who does that? Seriously, if someone walks away from you in your life and takes like 4 steps and then turns around and looks back at you and goes, "I don't know."
And throws their arms up.
You need to be like, hey, what's going on? What's happening?
Okay, so next scene, we're at D&D and we learn from Amanda that the lead person that was taking care of the Glorious Gowns account has just gone into labor. And as a result, Billy and Allison have to do her pitch to Glorious Gowns, which is like a wedding gown company.
Yeah.
So the dream team, Billy and Allison, God. Why are they working together?
Yeah.
Is there only 3 copywriters at this entire firm? And it's always got to be Billy and Allison teaming up together.
They should be doing separate things all of the time at work. But this is not the world we live in. This is not how D&D operates. But Amanda's talking to Glorious Gowns, and she's like, "Oh, I brought in Allison because she just had a wedding." And then Billy, not even under his breath, is like, Almost.
And then did you love on their way into the meeting, Billy's like, I know nothing about weddings. And then Allison says, well, maybe if you paid attention to your own.
Ouch.
So they're both throwing digs at each other. But the difference is Allison is way more professional about it. Mm-hmm. And then Billy just puts it out in the open in between, in front of everybody.
Yeah. Unprofessional like shit. Like you would be asked to leave. You'd be asked to excuse yourself. So Amanda, she's throwing out like suggestions for this shoot, and they're terrible. At first, she suggests we should shoot this at an amusement park or a hayride.
Yeah, what? They say that the gowns are so unique and so different that they should shoot them in really crazy locations,
like a hayride.
And then Allison conveniently brings up, or maybe a boat. The client loves this, and he's like, oh, well, I love boats. Yeah, and what we could do is have the veil be blowing in the wind and the bride jumping off the boat, and we could get her photo right as she's leaping, and it would just make for a beautiful visual, and the client's really buying this. But Billy, on the other hand, is not.
Until fucking Debbie Downer over here is like, yeah, like an escape, huh?
Oh, it's funny that you think of escaping her own wedding. Billy, she wouldn't be escaping. She'd be taking the plunge.
And the glorious gowns guy, like, lights up. But Billy, dude, you're at work. You cannot be digging at Allison like this while you're, like, trying to make money. Come on, man.
Yeah, he is totally terrible about this. But Allison continues to just plug along. She's ignoring him. And she says to the client, I actually have a shoot on a boat tomorrow. And it could be the perfect location to do your shoot. If you'd like to come by, you can see the boat for yourself, kind of see how we operate. Mm-hmm. And then this is when Amanda promptly interrupts and says, I hope you're not talking about Jake Hansen's Pretty Lady. As of today, we don't do business with Jake Hansen anymore. I'm going to be sending out a memo about it.
Yeah, who gives a shit, Amanda? Like, you know how many boats there are? Like, anybody.
Well, she even says that, like, we can go to any boat. But again, unnecessary to bring up in front of the client.
And doesn't she own, like, half of that business?
That has not been explored since, like, 10 episodes ago when they decided to, like, go in together and put money up.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they went in on that boat.
Well, like Jake on the whole business.
Jake had to pitch it to her.
That was back in the Reed days, though. Who knows what happened? Because then the ownership switched hands because it was sold at the auction.
But in order for Jake to like wiggle in to continue the business, he needed Amanda's help. I don't know.
Who knows, guys? They want to conveniently forget that.
Right. So let's head over to the beach house where... forgetful Michael Mancini is meditating on the beach, cross-legged, just like willing his mind to remember anything.
Now, Sydney, of course, pays a visit because she wants to jog his memory.
Right. And Michael is just like stupidly like, can I help you? Like, what? Are you a wizard now, Michael? Like, what is happening? What's going on? It's like he's blind and like... And, like, trying to feel, like, mystical powers. He's like, may I help you?
And Sydney's like, oh, are you waiting for your ship to come in? Well, I don't know. I don't know a lot of things lately because I've lost my memory and I just can't remember anything or anybody about my life.
Except that I'm a doctor and can perform all kinds of surgeries. And he says, like, I have a slight case of memory loss. No, you don't. This is very serious.
Yeah, like you can't remember anything.
Yeah, and Sydney's trying to act like she doesn't know him, and she introduces herself as Miranda.
Right, great name. And he's like, "Yes, I'm just trying to concentrate here, and just if I feel like maybe if I do it hard enough, something will come back to me." So they have like a cute little exchange, and he's like, "Well, you're always welcome here on my sand dune. Come and visit anytime you like."
Right. Goodbye, my child. Back to my meditations. Now we go to Amanda's. Palmer is like really enjoying living with Amanda, and he's like, this is great. I'm really liking this daughter. And she's like, this isn't a party, daddy.
So there's a knock at the door. Amanda goes to answer it, and it's Jake.
Oh, boy.
He caught wind of the whole we don't do business with Jake Canson anymore at D&D. And, of course, he's mad because he had something on the books tomorrow, which is now canceled.
And, dude, what the fuck is Amanda wearing right now? Did you make
I did, yeah, but they didn't do like a full body shot of her. It's like a striped midriff kind of a deal. Yeah, it's like a
candy striper, red and white stripe.
I think it's cute.
It's not Amanda. It's like a Sydney outfit.
Yeah, it is like Sydney.
Yeah, no chance Amanda's wearing that. And like around the house with your dad, like it's a little inappropriate.
What? Because her stomach is showing?
I think so.
Oh, Dan.
Yeah. Mox is not wearing that.
Oh, just
shit
wait
me.
To our daughter to wait 10 years.
She ain't going
to
be looking like Amanda Woodward. That's for damn sure. So Jake's wondering why she canceled the shoot. And yeah.
She says, "Where's the boat bimbo?" And he's like, "Oh, come on. Brittany's not a bimbo. She's not here. Just admit it. You canceled the shoot because you're jealous." And that's what it boils down to. And then, of course, Amanda tries to play it cool. She is!
She's totally
And she's
is.
Such a hypocrite! There is a scene later on where she reprimands Allison for doing exactly what she's doing.
Yeah.
Ah!
Such a hypocrite.
She really is. And she's like, look, there's lots of other boats in the sea, Jake, and I have yet to meet the right one for me, like, as a little...
Yeah. She told him. She said, have fun, go find yourself out.
I won't be waiting for you, do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, she said it. So, and then Palmer, they end their conversation, they got beef, and Palmer's like, don't waste your time on him. And Amanda's like, shut the fuck up, daddy, at least he's honest.
And you are in no position to judge Jake. I may not be with him any longer, but I still care about him. The pasta's on the stove, Daddy. Go ahead and eat it yourself. I've lost my appetite.
Oh,
and
God.
She storms into her bedroom.
So Palmer takes this time to call Brittany, and he's like, things aren't going as planned. We need to get moving now.
Oh, their big diabolical plan of Brittany just sleeping with Jake.
Yeah, what about this fight, like... messed up his plan.
What was the original plan?
Need you to fuck Jake a lot.
What was the original plan?
All right, so Brittany, you're going to jump off this boat. You're going to meet this guy. You're going to bang him. All right? You're going to bang him a lot. Okay? And then after like a week, after he kicks you off, I need you to string his boat with explosives.
That's so weird.
Like, what the hell, man?
Why did she have to sleep with him in order to
does not make sense. Why the hell did Palmer have to go on the boat?
Damn, these are
he didn't
lots of questions.
And what the hell was she looking for on the boat at first?
Maybe a place to hide the bomb.
But she was like her hands were just like going to
okay,
random places.
We'll get to that.
Doesn't make
but
sense.
But for now,
man.
Dan, we're with Jo, and she's visiting the Carters.
Oh, the ghosts? The ghost parents?
I don't know why I love that so much, but they're like...
Guys, rewatch this shit and imagine them as they're dead. It's so cool.
It's so funny.
It adds just a whole nother like supernatural element to the show that I think really... accentuates the drama. Like, they're dead, okay?
So, of course, Jo is just so kind and sweet. And she says, you know, I've come here because I'm hoping that we could work this out ourselves without lawyers. The Carters, they admit that they were surprised to see her and surprised that they weren't contacted by a lawyer. Mm-hmm.
Their place is disgusting.
Oh, my God.
Everything clashes.
It's so bad. I don't even, like, I don't know. And there's so much pattern. There's so much going on.
It's like checkered, and then it's and then
like
it's polka.
Floral patterns and garish colors.
They might be blind, too. They'd be dead and blind.
And so Jo is saying, you were so warm, you were so understanding, and I'm just trying to understand what went wrong. Like, you were, between the time that you saw me and the time that you got back home, like, what happened?
Yeah, the last time I saw y'all, you were like, oh, God bless you. And then you got Rob McElroy serving me papers.
And the crazy thing about it is they're like looking at her straight face like, oh, well, isn't it clear? You murdered our son, you cold-blooded killer murderer bitch. And it's like,
you what? Don't think you would want our grandchild to be raised by a cold-blooded killer?
We could never allow for that. It's quite clear, dear. The child will never be raised by you. You're terrible.
And the dad was like, the summons seemed clear to me. Like, we want the child.
Yeah.
We want your
and
baby.
It is really a complete 180 of what they represented to her just the previous episode.
Yeah, the previous episode, they said, we know that Reed was terrible. Basically, and they were like, we don't take responsibility for Reed.
So upon hearing this, Joe is just so shocked and hurt. She says, obviously, this was a mistake. And she gets up and she tries to leave.
And then they float towards the door. They like float over there. So the argument goes there. And Joe was like, you know, I was going to let you guys be a part of the baby's life. And then Reed's mom says, we have no intention of being a part of your family.
Yeah. And then she's like, this child will be raised with decent morals, decent values and moral judgment.
And that triggers Joe.
And that's when Joe just loses it. And she's like, you sanctimonious, self-righteous hypocrites. And all the while, did you catch this, that Reed's mom is just like clutching her cross the whole time.
Oh, she's going to cast a spell.
This is my baby, and no way in hell are you ever going to change that.
I mean, that's hard to say. Sanctimonious, self-righteous hypocrites.
Yeah, it's a little mouthful.
I wonder how many takes that took old Daphne. Well, Daphne...
probably one, because she's perfect.
When you come on the podcast, you can talk to us about that. So, yeah.
So, just let us know when you're going to pencil that in. We'd love to have you. Whenever. You know, we're flexible.
Whenevs. So that's where we leave them. Joe exits the house. And then, I hate it when people do this because no one does.
No one does. I thought this too.
You never shut a door and then cry against it.
Yeah, I mean, if something like that happened, you'd want to get as far away from that house as you possibly could.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want any way that these freaking crazy ghosts could like float through the door and like get into your soul and possess you or something. Yeah.
Does Joe still ride a motorcycle?
Good question.
I think that's her only mode
of transportation. And where does Reed's there? Are they in the Bay Area?
They should be in New York.
Oh, that's right.
They should live in New York. So should Reed. They like switched Reed when they had
the high school reunion.
So so his parents just probably live like two blocks from Melrose Place.
Yeah, probably. Okay.
Is it legal to drive a motorcycle as a pregnant woman?
I think so. You can't really impose laws on people that are pregnant. Like, it's advised that you shouldn't drink alcohol, but it's not against the law for you to do that.
Mm. It's just stupid. It's dangerous.
Yeah.
Don't do that, guys. Now, Michael is coming home to the beach house with a bag of groceries, and he sees some sexy legs.
Some stems just lounging on a chair.
And it's revealed that it is Sydney/Miranda. And he's like, I'm surprised to see you here. I live with somebody.
And Miranda says, well, this is your house and you said I can come by anytime. And then just starts kissing him and like trying to make out. He tries to pull away and he's like, I believe in being faithful. It's like, okay.
All right, buddy.
Oh, well, you're going to, like, once you get to know your real self, that's going to fall by the wayside.
And again, like, the difference between a friend and, like, a lover or partner is very foggy in the Melrose Place universe. Because this isn't the first time that someone's just like, think of me as a very close friend. And remember, Brittany was like, friends do it too.
Yeah.
Like, they don't care. Like, all you got to do is, like, know somebody and you can get it in. So Michael, he's trying to, like, he's trying to wiggle out of this makeout sesh, but he's also really, really digging it. And he's the whole, like, I believe in being faithful.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah. So Sydney asks, do you remember? And Michael says, oh, about Kimberly? Well, yeah. I mean, she told me that I was crazy about her before the accident. And oh, gosh, I got to go. You're beautiful and everything, but I can't. And then he runs away.
And he clenches the groceries like a teddy bear. He's like, oh, like to hide a boner or something.
That's probably more of what he was doing.
I'm really sorry, pretty girl, but I have to leave. This Michael sucks. I hate him.
Yeah.
Can't wait for cool Michael.
Yeah.
So let's go to D&D.
Billy barges into Amanda's office.
And slams like
okay, a so
thing of papers on her desk.
You're on the job for what? Maybe a week at this point? And you think that's acceptable? You just barge into your boss's office and just start barking at her?
That's what he does.
It's just the worst. And he's like, Allison basically told me that everything I do is crap. I wrote this copy for Glorious Gowns. Take a look at it.
And Amanda looks at it for seriously.
Exactly 1.4 seconds.
And she goes, well, this looks great to me.
This is the best copy I've ever read in my life. It's obvious that Allison is letting her emotions take over her professionalism.
And she's
oh, like, really, Amanda? She's doing that? Oh, was she the one that just fired Jake because you broke up?
Brit.
Oh, I don't know. I think that was you, you freaking hypocrite.
I can smell the hypocrisy. And so we leave that scene with Amanda saying to Billy that she'll deal with Allison. So now we got Brittany and Palmer in the car, and Brittany's like practicing Amanda's signature on a pad of paper.
Right. And so they have this plan that there's a safety deposit box in the bank and only Amanda can access it. So Palmer wants Brittany to pose as Amanda and go into the bank and sign some documents and get the whatever is in the safety deposit box.
Yeah, and Brittany's complaining like she's doing all the heavy lifting, and she has a really funny line where she's like, you're at Amanda's and I'm on a boat trying to rig it with explosives.
And Brittany keeps saying, what about your beautiful, wonderful little daughter who's going to do anything for you? Why isn't she just doing this? Why do I have to do this? I'm sticking my neck out for you time and time again. And you know what, Palmer? I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. I'll take care of the boat. You take care of the bank.
I don't understand their relationship at
all. I don't either.
Like, were they to get, like, the whole like, how was it with Jake? That makes me think like they were together.
Yeah, it insinuates that they had a sexual relationship at one time.
Yeah, but they just don't understand what it is that they are.
Did he hire her? Like, what's the going rate that she's getting for this? Yeah. I don't know. He said $50,000. So
it seems like he could have had anyone pose as Amanda and get this deposit box.
Or, I mean, why couldn't he just ask Amanda?
Yeah, and he could just screw Jake over with a far less intricate plan.
So weird. And yeah. Be $50,000 richer.
Yeah. So now Palmer is at Amanda's, and he's apologizing that they only have takeout. And then Amanda throws some shade like, well, we can't exactly go to
Spago's. Yeah. So that's when Palmer starts kind of revealing some stuff to Amanda. He says, look, Amanda, I owe some bad people a great deal of money. And if I don't pay them, they're threatening to come after you. And of course, Amanda's like, oh, great, Daddy, you're pulling me into these crazy, awful plans again.
And this is complete bullshit, right?
Yeah. And he says, no, well, Amanda, what the thing is, I have a safety deposit box that I set aside when you were very young, when your mother and I split, and there's money in there, a little less than $1 million. So all I need you to do is go into the bank and get that money out. It has my name on it, and it has your name on it, and I just can't take the risk of going myself.
Isn't it funny that, like, I mean, we're not rich by any means, but $1 million isn't, like, crazy to me.
What do you mean?
Like, they're talking about it like...
$1 million! Like, yeah, Dr. Like, Evil style?
Oh, my God. Like, it's just, like, unfathomable, you know? But now I'm like, well, I mean, that'll get you good for a long time, but, like, it's no sort of...
You'd be pretty good, with $1 million.
Right.
If you had, like, the know-how that you could continue to keep, like, a regular job and get a salary and then have $1 million to fall back on.
Yeah.
Pay off your debts.
But you could totally
buy a house outright.
Yeah, but you could totally just spend that.
I mean, if you were an idiot, you could.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, you could buy a house and not have a mortgage.
Right.
And then you just continue to, like, work a regular job.
Yeah. I guess you're right. But I don't know. It's not a sum of
it's
money.
It's not
that
like,
I'm like
you're set forever.
Right. And I feel like that's how they are talking about it. You know?
Well, it is a large sum of money.
Yes, of course. So they got $1 million in a cash deposit box, and they need both the signatures.
Yeah. So basically, he also reveals to Amanda that the loan that he had provided to her to buy Melrose Place, the building, was furnished by this money in the safety deposit box. So Amanda actually owns the apartment complex outright, which was a great bit of news for her to learn.
And she loves that.
And he just says, you know, I'm going to take that money. I'm going to pay off the guys that I owe the money to and then turn myself in. And then that way I can rest assured that you are taken care of, that you are not in any danger while I'm behind bars.
And Amanda likes this and she's like, okay, I will agree to go with you tomorrow and we'll get it.
Now, Kimberly and Michael are out to eat and they are walking toward the street and they were kind of just like going over what happened at dinner. And Michael haphazardly just walks into the middle of the street without looking.
And immediately has a flashback of
getting
hit by a car.
Because it's like a busy street. Cars are coming. And then an oncoming car is just honking at him. And he's just staring blindly into the headlights like, oh, what do I do?
And Kimberly screams and pulls him back. And then, like, as the car passes, we rewound this a couple times. But somebody just screams out, idiot!
Dan loved that part.
It's so great.
And so Michael has this flashback, and he can see very clearly the driver of the car. And I guess this was supposed to be obvious that it was Kimberly. But
it wasn't.
I don't think this was obvious at all. She's wearing really big sunglasses, the infamous wig. I mean, really, it could be like anybody, but Michael's expression kind of tells it all, that he's putting the pieces together and he has an inkling that it may have been Kimberly who tried to run him down.
And the question comes up, what are the odds of that happening twice in your life? And Michael is just like, a million to one.
Yeah. So the very next scene, Michael and Kimberly are in bed together.
And he's given her the best sex she's ever had.
Yeah, she's like, oh, Michael, it's never been like that before. That was incredible.
And then Michael's like, thanks. Can you get me some coffee then?
And then she's like, oh, no, no, no. That's not how this works, Michael. Usually after we have sex, you go get me a cup of coffee while I go shower and get ready for my high prestigious work in the medical field. What you have to do is just keep the home fires burning and take care of the homestead for me and be my little stay-at-home husband.
She says, your job is to love, honor, and keep the home fires burning.
Honestly, that seems like a pretty good gig.
Yeah, I'd be like, all right, that's cool.
Hey, you just like finance everything I do and I just get to live in this awesome house. Yes, sir. One coffee coming up.
Would you like one lump or two?
I'd be cool with that.
Cream and sugar. but Michael is sort of, he's up for returning to work because, you know, he did not lose that part of his memory at all.
Yeah, if you guys remember, he remembers everything about being a doctor.
Right. So he's like, I kind of want to work. And And Kimberly is sort of just like, oh no, that'd be silly. And Michael, like, Kimberly's like, I guess she goes to work or whatever. And Michael just like kind of starts sneering at her.
Well, he says a line. She tries to say, oh, Michael, that's a little silly, a little premature. And she's like, he says, no, I think it's really time. And you know what, Kimberly, I have to thank you so much. If it hadn't been for you, I may not be where I am today. And that has kind of like a double-edged meaning. Like, I'd probably be good because I'm putting the clues together that you're the one that tried to kill me.
Right. So now let's go to Certified National Bank, where Palmer is with Amanda.
Right. Amanda walks out to the car. She's been in the bank. She has the briefcase. It's filled with the money. We see it. It's lots of $100 bills.
It doesn't look like a million. There's no way that could be $1 million.
Why would you say that? It's $100 bills.
Yeah. You need 1,000 $100 bills.
Yeah. I think right? That would fit.
No, you need 1,000 $1,000. That's $1 million.
Wait, 1,000, $1,000?
Yeah.
They're $100 bills.
Right. So there's no fucking way that $1 million is in that briefcase.
Okay.
A million is 1,000 thousands.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
and you have 100, and the biggest increment of money is a $100 bill. So there's no fucking way that that's $1 million.
Okay.
Right?
Math isn't my strong suit. Let's keep going.
I think I'm right there. So yeah, I correct me if I'm wrong, but Google images of $1 million and see if it's that much. So, but they get the briefcase and Palmer, he tells Amanda that the building is all hers.
Oh, crap.
There.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Whatevs.
Yeah, he says it there.
Jumped the gun. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now Brittany, we cut away. Brittany shows up at the Pretty Lady.
What's up with those pants?
I don't know.
Ugh.
I do not know.
Not flattering.
But she rolls up. She's doing this weird, like, duck lip thing.
She shows up to the Pretty Lady and she's like, Jake, are you here? Jake. And she's like calling for Jake. And she realizes he's not there. She goes into the cabin of the Pretty Lady and takes out very obvious explosives.
And Brittany doesn't seem like the type. Sorry if I'm being a little sexist here, but she does not seem like the type to know how to put dynamite together.
Don't underestimate a pretty face, Dan.
And rig it to a boat.
She might be pretty, but she has the brains to go along with it.
She just knows how to.
Don't know her background. You don't know anything about her. She could be a spy.
I just know that she's a
dumbass. She could be an explosives. Well, maybe that's what she wants you to think.
Maybe.
Ah.
Maybe.
So, but she does make a very weird expression while she's taking out.
She's taking out the dynamite.
She's like pursing her lips in a way that's not flattering.
No. No. And these things just look like clay with wires in them. When I think of dynamite, I think of like the red like sticks with the tips.
Oh yeah.
And they go like tss.
Like
when you light
the cartoon version.
Right.
Yeah.
But this is like a big block. Like, and then they get attached to like gas.
Yeah.
Gas cans.
That's plausible.
It's weird. I don't know.
Okay. So next up, it's Allison's turn to barge into Amanda's office.
Right. And she's like, you overrode my choices?
Ugh. Yeah. And it's just kind of like, Amanda, again, is your boss. So even you, if you may hate her and may know her in other capacities other than your boss, I just like...
She could do what she wants.
Like, the fact that Billy and Allison are like treating her like this is kind of weird. But then Amanda fights fire with fire. She's like, you know, I could have you fired for doing what you're doing with Billy, putting your little breakup on display in front of everybody and taking it out on him in the workplace. Okay, Amanda, you do the same stuff, but whatever.
And Allison is just like, Amanda, why are you doing this to me?
Oh, well, here's the recap for you.
She breaks it down. She breaks it the fuck down. She's like, I promised you to make your life a living hell, and I keep all my promises.
Right. And she goes over, well, first you broke up me and Jake. Then you almost ruined the relationship with my mother. Then you went and testified against me. And she's like, I could fire you right now, but that would be too easy. What I'm going to do is make you work here and make your life horrible.
And don't bother quitting, because I can put a bunch of shit on your file and you wouldn't get a job bagging groceries.
Oh.
I think that's a little far. I think she could get a job bagging groceries.
Yeah, I think she could do something else.
Because you wouldn't need to put any references.
Because, you know, a regular person would be like, quit.
Yeah.
I think they have to just like throw that in there as like a safeguard to be like, oh, we thought of that.
And did you notice how many people had bags of groceries this episode?
I mean, there's...
Count them. Michael had a bag of groceries, Jane had a bag of groceries, and Amanda had a bag of groceries.
So bagging groceries is like a really big thing that was happening in LA in the 90s. So
it's the theme of this episode.
There could be some potential job openings for people that could be doing that.
Yeah. Absolutely. So Allison is fucked at work, basically. She knows now, oh, this is like for real. Like people actually get mad at you after you testify against
them. Yeah. It's like, Allison, what is wrong with you?
And shout out, because this was why I lost Bitch of the Week, because I totally forgot that Amanda swore to Allison that she was going to do this. Someone posted in the group that they're like, yeah, she is a bitch, but she said she was going to do this.
Hey, that's a good
point.
I was
like, oh, yeah, damn. Yeah, Allison has done some fucked up shit to Amanda.
She has. Now, Amanda returns home. She is looking for her dad. She's calling out his name.
Daddy, hello.
And the apartment's dark. He's gone.
You're all alone, Amanda.
The briefcase is on the table. She opens it and it's empty.
You've been got.
Now,
you got.
It was hard to me to feel any sympathy for her in this episode, coming off of the scene we just had with Allison.
Yeah.
I was like, well, you're a dumb bitch. Like,
yeah, she's alone.
It's hard to feel bad for you because you suck so bad and you're so mean to everybody. And I get it. Allison has done some pretty shitty things to her, but this perpetuation of like, don't get mad, get even, just keep making people's lives miserable, it's going to come back to you. And sorry, like, that's...
You do dirt, you get dirt.
Yeah.
And I thought that, like, she grabs her, like, brick of a phone and her like, phone book. And I thought it would have been way more powerful for her to just, like, look at that and then, like, put it back down in her lap and, like, start crying. Because in my head, I was like, you have nobody you could call. You don't have any friends.
That's a really...
Like, who are you going to call?
That actually is like, I think that would have been a really powerful moment.
Yeah, I'm just like, shit.
Like, I've burned all my bridges. Nobody wants me. No one wants to be with me. But instead, they made another choice, which propels the plot line a little further.
Mm-hmm.
She calls and asks for Special Agent Hill.
That's me, baby.
Oh, maybe a long-distance relative. I don't know.
Yeah.
And if you'll remember, Special Agent Hill is the detective that is working her father's case. He had a lot of questions for her after Palmer disappeared.
Yeah.
And
I'm surprised she's doing this because what's she going to say? I was aiding my father and he screwed me over.
Well, she could say he promised me that he was going to turn himself in. We had a plan. He had me do this. I should have known better. And I think if you cooperate with the police department, I mean, I think they cut you a little bit of slack and she feels like this is the best thing to do. But, you know, it's kind of like there are so many other scenarios that could have happened. He might be getting dinner right now. And he didn't want to leave $1 million in cash just like sitting on her dining room.
Right.
He could have done the drop with the guys and something terrible could have happened. And maybe they murdered him. Maybe they've kidnapped him. Maybe she's going to get a call from the kidnapper saying, we need you to do X, Y, and Z. Do not call the cops.
Yeah.
There are many things that could have happened. So she makes this decision very quickly. And
very quickly.
We cut to the next scene.
We cut to the next one. And Michael shows up at Jane's.
Sydney is home alone. She answers the door in kind of like lingerie sleepwear.
Yeah.
And she's very surprised to see Michael. She asks him, how did you know where I lived?
And Michael's like, I can't stop thinking about you, Miranda. How'd you figure out where I lived? I followed you.
That's got to be like very scary.
Yeah.
So okay. She's like, okay, come inside. And he says, going to bed so early? And she responds with, I don't know. That's up to you.
Oh, God.
So immediately. Yo,
how is Sydney already fucking this whole shit up?
Because she's Sydney, Dan.
This is her. It should have been her first day at work. She is already back to her old tricks.
And to add insult to injury, he picks her up, takes her into the bedroom, which, remember, is Jane's bedroom. So first day in Jane's apartment, she's going to have sex with Jane's ex-husband on her own bed.
Yeah.
And that's pretty shitty.
Who said they had a dream about them? Was it Sydney or Michael? Someone was like, I had a dream about you. You were mine. All mine.
What?
Someone says that. Yeah.
I don't remember that.
I'm not sure. Let us know who said that. I forget.
So, wait. No, oh, wait. In this scene.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about like a previous thing. No.
It was either Michael.
Michael had a dream. And he said, I had a dream about you. In the dream, I tied you up and you were mine, all mine. And she was like, oh, okay. So there's a scarf like right there on the bed within arm's reach. And Michael's like, I want to make this dream a reality. And he starts like tying Sydney up. And she's like, oh, yeah, tie me up. Michael, you're going to make me beg for it. And he's like, oh, I just want to see you squirm. It's so nice to see you. You're all mine. And she's like, well, come on. Why don't you just do it to me already?
And he says, if you think I'm making love to you, you'll be waiting a long time. And he said, I wouldn't sleep with you at gunpoint.
And so it's really funny to see this because Sydney takes a beat. It like takes just a minute to sink in. And then she just makes this grimace on her face. And she's like, Michael, is that you?
And he's like, hiya, Sid. He's back, baby. God bless America. Mancini is back. My guy, my homie, my gangster. You're back. Welcome. We missed you.
Yeah, it was a really funny reveal.
And he's just like, hey, how you doing, Sid? Like, he is so riled up.
Yeah, he's great. And you know what? That whole little song and dance that he was like, I don't remember anything. I'm just a puppet. Kimberly told me what to do. It's like, shut up.
Yeah, he's like meditating on the goddamn beach for crying out loud.
So Michael wants answers. He wants to know who tried to kill him, and he knows that Sydney may have the key to this.
Yeah, so Sydney's like, what do you want? He's like, I want answers. She was like, Kimberly ran you over. And he's like, and she's like, she's crazy. And he's like, well, at least she's like play crazy.
No.
Right?
No, he says, Sydney says, Kimberly's been trying to kill you for months. Michael, she's insane. And Michael says, and you're normal? And then he's like, so he's satisfied with this answer. I think it really just confirms his suspicions because he's starting to kind of think this could have been Kimberly. So he's like, okay, we'll sleep tight. See you later. And Sydney's like, wait, you're not going to untie me. And he's like, nope, have a nice night. And he leaves her like that.
And then he was like, oh yeah, don't try to squirm. The knots only get tighter. Is that a thing? Like, could that happen?
Oh, damn. There are so many knots you can do.
He must be like,
you weren't a Boy Scout, but yeah, there are so many knots that, of course, you can do something like that.
I don't even want to ask how you know all that. You've been tied up.
Maybe.
Oh, God. So Mikey is back. So now Michael leaves. Jane comes home with Chris, the retailer. And of course, there's like sucking face, and they're about to go do it. And they hear, Jane, is that you? Help!
So they rush to Sydney's aid, who is still tied up on the bed. And the retailer's like, oh God, I'll call the police right away. And Sydney's like, no, 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 there's no need. It was Michael. He's regained his memory. He knows everything. He thinks that I had something to do with the hit and run. So he came here as retaliation. And Jane is like, oh, come on, Sydney. That's not what happened. You are dressed up to receive visitors here. Like, I yeah, know.
You working.
I know your song and dance. And she's like, no.
Did you have another whore party in there?
And Sydney's like, no, I swear, he pushed me in. I didn't want to let him in, but he just came in and was very violent and scary to me.
Oh, God. So Jane is like, I'm sorry, Chris. We got to deal with this. And then they just start making out in the room. And then
Chris And then freaking Chris, as he's making out with Jane, Jane has her back to Sydney. Chris freaking opens one eye and looks, just stares at Sydney on the bed while she's sulking. And it is one of the creepiest things I've ever seen on this show.
Yeah.
It was very unnerving.
About as creepy as, what was his name? Ted Ramsey? The peeper?
Oh, yeah.
Drilling big ass holes in the shower.
No, like his face, like that look, ugh.
Yeah, it was weird. So yeah, he's giving her the old stink eye. And now we're back to the boat life. Palmer rolls up to the boat as Jake is working on it. And
it's really funny to try to see him be like stealthy. He's like so, he's like this old little like.
You'd have to like get on the boat all slow like.
Oh, God, gotta get my sea legs.
Yeah, watch out. And he stows some.
Explosives? I don't know.
It's the money, isn't it?
Is it the money?
It's a portion of the money.
It's probably the money, actually.
But it's not $1 million. I'm telling you, $1 million will not fit in that bag.
Oh my God, Dad. We'll have to look at Google Images and see.
Yeah, so.
He said it's a little under $1 million. He didn't say it was $1 million.
Yeah, a little under. So you need at 900,000.
Okay.
1,000 bills.
So anyway, he brandishes a gun and he's walking the decks looking for Jake. Jake is up at the captain's chair. He climbs the ladder, sneaks up behind him, and then wedges the gun into Jake's ribs and says, come on, Jake, let's go for a ride. Next scene, we are with Sydney, and she is on her first day of work at J. Mancini Designs. She is doing something with garments on a table, and behind her comes the retailer, Chris, who creepily sneaks up behind her and like kind of like puts like his arms
into her like, neck.
Are you feeling better today, Sydney?
And he's like, no wonder you made such a good whore. And she's like, what the fuck? This is my first day. Yeah. Man, I'm at work.
Well, what he says is, Michael tied you up. You let him, didn't you? The way we found you, there's no way he could have done that to you against your will. You let him in and you let him tie you up. He says, no wonder you made such a good whore. And her response is, Jane told you about that.
She told you about my hooking days.
She doesn't try to deny like, it.
She can't. She opens her mouth again. God damn it.
And then he says, I would have figured it out myself. I've seen so many white trash whores to last a lifetime.
Damn, that means he's been at it.
But still, he's so creepy. He's got the worst vibe. And she's like, ew, get away from me. Even Sydney is like, get away from me. And usually she goes for like anybody that shows her any kind of attention.
Or orderlies. That creepy ass orderly.
Oh no, Dan.
He was less creepy.
Yucky. At least Chris is like a little bit more attractive. That orderly was like out of a freaking like horror movie.
So let's go back to the beach house. Kimberly comes home from work. This scene's awesome. Kimberly comes home from work and Michael and she says,
why isn't dinner ready?
Yeah, she's like, she's like trying to groom a like she, fucking servant.
Yeah, she really wants him to play this role of like stay-at-home husband. He's the real house husband of Hollywood. He's going to take care of her every need, do all the chores, all the housework. I kind of like this arrangement.
No, fuck that. I'm not doing this. Don't even get it twisted. You have to run me down with a car.
Oh, Dan, I know. I could never do anything to get you to do the laundry or a dish. I'm saying for me.
That's right.
I would be cool with, like, I would just take care of the house if someone let me live in a beach house in Malibu. I'd be cool with that.
Okay. Well, maybe one day. One day. Call the dude who tied you up.
Shut up.
So, Michael is basically like, dinner's not ready because I thought we'd go out tonight.
And I think maybe you should wear this. And he pulls out a floral dress from behind his back. Now, this is the same dress that Kimberly wore while she tried to run him down in a car. So she knows this and her face is like,
and then he pulls out the wig.
I thought you could wear this too. And then, now she knows she's caught. She knows it's over. And she bolts. No,
she was like, what is this, Michael? And he was like, just a little amnesia humor. That's all.
And yeah, she...
Then she split.
She runs out the front door. She jumps in her car, tries to make a speedy getaway. But before she can leave...
We forgot a badass line.
Say it.
Like, she was... She's basically like, you got your memory back or something? And then Michael's like, hi, honey. I'm home.
Oh, yeah. So that confirms to her that, like, Michael knows it all. He knows the past. And he has figured out that she is the little perpetrator here. So
she runs for her life.
Yeah. So she's in the car. She's trying to drive away. Michael runs out in front of the car. Headlights are on him and he's like, go ahead, you want to kill me? Kill me, run me down. Here's your chance, Kimberly.
Put it in gear.
Do it. And so she's like flipping out. She doesn't know what to do. And this is a rare moment too to see Kimberly not on her game and not being 100% composed.
She won't do it.
She's usually the one that's like, she always has a plan. She's always confident and always very deliberate in all of her actions and what she's saying. And we see kind of like the cracks in the facade and she just starts like breaking down.
This has been happening the last two episodes, you know, like we were saying, people have been at her, clawing at her. Like when Jane had that dig on her, when Sydney had a dig on her earlier, Matt got her at the hospital, snatched the wig off.
You know, it's like real hard to just maintain this whole like persona of being the crow.
When you the crow, people trying to get you. People try to get you.
So Michael walks over to her driver's side door and he's like, kill me or love me. It's your choice.
Make up your damn mind.
Now, this turns Kimberly on. She jumps right out of the car and they just start kissing. He's ripping off her shirt, buttons are flying, and they're just going at it right there in the hood of the car.
So we leave that one big happy family and we go to Palmer on the boat, and he is just standing next to Jake, not holding a gun to Jake and just holding binoculars. And I'm like, why doesn't Jake just fuck him up where he stands?
I know. And it's like, it's funny because they try to like pass Palmer off as like this imposing, scary, like boss guy. And it's like, he's this little old man that you could just subdue in a second. And he's like, oh, well, let's see how you take care of yourself now, Jake. First you get me arrested and then you turn my only lovely daughter against me. You're going to pay for this.
So yeah, they roll up on the other boat. And Jake's like, you're not going to kill me over the Avante deal, are you?
Yeah, so Brittany has a little speedboat and she's waiting for Palmer. And she's like, okay, Brittany pulls up to their boat, the Pretty Lady. And now Jake is piecing together this puzzle and thinking, they're going to kill me.
Yeah, he's like, you're not going to kill me over the Avante deal? And Palmer just like punches him in the head with the gun, like he pistol whips him. And that knocks Jake down for a little bit. And then Palmer is like gathering up his shit from the boat to throw it over to Brittany. And he does that. And then Brittany's like, I have the money. I got the IDs. Later, Palmer, why do I need you, you old fart?
Yeah. She's like, I've got the passports. I've got the cash. And I have no use for an old man. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then so she's got a gun pointed at Palmer. And she calls out to Jake. Jake, get up. Quick. Quick. Hurry up. Get off of the boat. Come with me.
No, not before she shoots Palmer.
Well, then she shoots Palmer.
Yeah.
And Palmer falls directly on Jake. So this is a kill shot. It gets Palmer immediately. He's down on Jake, and Jake has to climb up from under Palmer.
This is the second murder on the pretty lady.
And it's like very horrific and violent.
Yeah. So
this Jake, boat is cursed.
It is cursed. So Jake like pulls fat ass Palmer off of him. And he gets up, and Brittany is just like, Jake, let's rock. I got $1 million.
We can go anywhere. We start over. We can be anybody. Come on. You said that you have nothing here. This is your chance.
And she says, don't make me kill you, Jake.
And Jake's like, go to hell. Can you believe that?
Jake would rather die.
You would rather die than go with this Sports Illustrated swimsuit model with $1 million?
Hang out with Kathy Ireland all day, forever. So
like he's willing to die for this.
Yeah, he says go to Jake is stubborn as shit. Not the first time he's been in a blaze.
Now, luckily, Brittany just doesn't have the heart to shoot him, and she's like, fine. And it's kind of like, well, I tried. Like,
oh well. So she pulls out her like Inspector Gadget remote control, flicks a switch, and kapwah. They really blew this fucking boat up.
They really blew it up to get the shot.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So the boat is blown to smithereens. It's on fire in the water. And that's it, guys. We cut to credits.
Now the pretty lady is blown to smithereens. I'm thinking in my head, well, Jake's gonna live. But
will he, Dan? We don't know.
But the boat, like the boat completely blew up.
It's done.
Like
there's no vestige of hope
that
for anybody on that boat. So
but I bet in 94 people are like, Jake, no, yeah. Jake. Yeah.
So what's our recap?
All right, recapping this thing, Sydney gets out and starts living with Jane.
Things are not going well at D&D between Billy and Allison.
Amanda helps Palmer get $1 million, only to get blindsided by him.
Joe tries to reason with the Carters, but they still insist on suing her for custody.
Jake blows up on a boat after Palmer tries to kill him.
The retailer is closing in on Sydney.
Palmer is 100% dead.
Michael regains his memory and suspects Kimberly.
Brittany is now the sole owner of $1 million.
And Jake is presumed dead in a boat explosion.
Jeez.
What an ep.
What an episode. We always call out the 90s moments that we find throughout the episodes. Jenny, you got any?
Yeah, the first one I saw was the wrapped wedding present. Usually in this day and age, when you're getting married, you're having a gift sent to the person via Amazon or any kind of like that's sent to their home. And it's usually not wrapped. It usually just comes in the packaging.
Our friends and family just hate us, so they don't pay the extra.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I just thought that that was kind of a funny thing because it reminded me of that back in the 90s, if you attended a wedding, you would bring the gift with you to the actual wedding and give it to the couple there. In this day and age, the only thing that you really see is cards given to the couple. You don't physically give them a gift and gift wrap it.
Yeah, that's true. I've got those old ass $100 bills in the briefcase.
Yeah, I had that too. Another wedding thing is the concept of not getting married in a church was like revolutionary. Like, we're going to take the wedding out of the church. Oh, wow. Crazy. Getting married on a boat?
Whoa.
How could you ever do that? And then in this day and age, I think most couples opt for non-traditional weddings. It's kind of passé to have your wedding in a church.
Mm-hmm. I've got Billy at work rocking the the jeans, the tucked in dress shirt and tie. That's so 90s.
Yeah.
It's like
the cool teacher on Boy Meets World. Yeah. I always think of him.
Who was he was on Melrose Place.
Mm.
The last episode. He was a detective.
Yeah.
But he it's very substitute teacher.
Yeah, totally. I also have calling an actual payphone. Like, you call the payphone and somebody's waiting there to answer your call.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Brittany, when she leaves the pretty lady, after she tells Jake that her dangerous husband is coming, she has one of those mini backpacks.
Oh, yeah. They're making a comeback.
The mini backpack purse. Oh, God.
I had a couple of those.
So dumb.
Wallpaper at the Carter's house.
Ugh.
That wallpaper, man.
Well, when you're dead, there's not many options. all the paper bag groceries with no handles. Everyone's holding their groceries with the paper bags.
Yeah. I have Amanda referencing Spago. Spago's been open for over 30 years here in LA, but it opened in the early 80s and really like early to mid 90s was its heyday. It was really the place to eat in LA. It was Wolfgang Puck's like inaugural thing that he did.
We've got a really clean shot of Jane's Mac, her Mac Apple computer with like a 4-inch screen.
Nice. I think Amanda having a personal phone book, a book that you would keep all of your friends and family's numbers in.
You still do that?
Well, it's an address book, Dan. It's not just phone numbers.
Paper deliveries.
Hmm.
Even though that was going to like a newsstand at the beginning, still a lot of papers.
Yeah.
To just be delivering.
Cool.
Is that all you got?
That's all I got.
That's all I got too. All these episodes, deep down, when you peel back the layers, there's a lesson to be had. My lesson this week is don't let strangers spend time on your work boat alone.
That's a really good one.
They may or may not have a whole lot of time to rig it with explosives. Like, dude, you just met Brittany, and he's like, well, I'm just going to go stay at my place. See, like, make sure you get off the boat at some point. Nah, man. You got to lock that thing down. You leave, she leaves.
I think that's a really poignant point.
Poignant point.
My lesson is, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Nice.
Now, Amanda has already had the wool pulled over her eyes by her daddy, but she gives him another chance and she expects a different outcome. And unfortunately, he's up to his old tricks and she's surprised by this. So I think if someone does you wrong before and you give them another chance, you should probably think that they're going to screw you over again.
I agree.
Now it's time for Bitch of the Week! I'm a boss ass bitch, 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 bitch. I'm a boss ass bitch.
All right, guys. Last week, Jenny, you nominated the Carters.
I did.
You've been doing the couples.
I've been coupling up.
You've been coupling them up. So, and I picked Amanda. And on Twitter, with a sweep, 3-0, the Carters are the bitch of the week.
Woo!
And in our Facebook group, 11-7. This was a close one. The Carters, again, bitch of the week. Jenny,
oh, thank you. Thank you.
Everyone hated the Carters.
Well, I'd have to agree. They were pretty big bitches. But you know what? Sherry didn't think so. She went with you, Dan. She thought that Amanda was the bitch of the week for sure. She was a total bitch to not even at least let Allison know that Billy was going to work with her at D&D in the first place. And she was listening in on Billy and Allison's private conversation on her intercom on where they were going to go from there on their relationship. After she told them that she would give them some privacy to talk alone, that was a nosy, bitchy thing to do. Totally agree with that. I got to say that the Carters take the cake for me, but great point, Jerry.
Janky says, I'm voting for Amanda, basically because her actions are just so deliciously bitchy. She's playing a perfect long game of chess with Allison. Amanda may also be a sociopath. New thing for me to research versus doing actual work. I mean, she really is making sure Allison wishes she was never born. X works at her office right next to her and moves out into an apartment unit in the same building. Only thing to make it better would be to make Billy Allison's boss and to have his apartment right next door.
Good one. Mitch Ruby, though, she's on my side. She says Amanda's bitchiness never really surprises her, but the Carters are creepy as fuck and made me mad. Can't wait for next week.
Zach says, Dan, you are forgetting that Allison facilitated in the breakup of Amanda and Jake. Sure, that relationship was already on its last leg and just needed that little push, but the same can be said of Allison and Billy. Allison also almost cost Amanda her job and career by corroborating Chaz's story in court based on her seeing him closing the blinds while he was kissing Amanda, which completely contradicts his lawsuit. Amanda is out for blood, and rightfully so. Really, she should be commended for putting her personal grievances aside while Allison dealt with her family issues.
That's a really good point, actually.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier in the podcast.
Like, Zach, you really did bring up a good point there, and she did cut Allison a lot of slack.
Mm-hmm.
Donald says that this was difficult, but he agrees with me that the Carters are so creepy and the things that they do later on. But his other nomination for Bitch of the Week is Billy. He just didn't like the way that he treated Allison and how he thinks that she killed the relationship when he thinks that he is the one who did it. So that there's a lot to be said for that too, Donald.
I don't know. Billy wanted to get married in Vegas. And Allison was like, okay, cool.
The longer I think about this, the longer I feel like, give Allison some time.
Okay. Graham says, even though I shouted at the TV screen when Amanda pressed that intercom button, what a nosy Parker bitch, right? I have to go with the Carters and their creepy, sinister charade to get Joe to admit that Reed was the father. Also, they could slap her with that custody lawsuit. Their look after our baby comment was genuinely chilling.
Yuck.
And you know, I just hate them. I also agree with Donald. Billy is another contender. He was a total bastard to Allison in this episode.
Now, Michael says that as much as Dan's impassioned rant nominating Amanda as the episode's bitch of the week had him in hysterics,
had me in hysterics.
Well, had Michael. I'm talking about Michael.
Right. Okay. Continue.
I can't elaborate much more on why he disagrees since Zach already did a more than thorough job of it. His argument is pretty much verbatim everything that Zach laid out. Dan, you are hilarious. And yes, Amanda is and always will be Melrose Place's queen bitch. But your memory must be as faulty as Allison's. Yep. It's been maybe a month on the show's timeline, if that, since the whole Chaz fiasco went down, along with Amanda's relationship with Jake, any chance of a real future with her estranged mother, and oh yes, nearly her entire career in the advertising industry as a whole. And whose big mouth started the train on its track? I sympathize with Allison's family issues with what her father and mother, for that matter, did to her was as a child is horrifying beyond words, but it doesn't erase what Allison set in motion at the end of last season. This goes on pretty long. He seconds Donald's whole thing about Billy being the bitch, but I think in the end, does he agree with me that the Carters are the bitch? Yes, he does. Nice. He votes for Billy fucking Campbell. Allison dodged a major bullet there.
Viv says, ever since Allison ruined her relationship with Jake and her mother, and hell, ever since she stole Billy from her, she was out to get back at her. Billy was a pawn on her mission to destroy Allison. Amanda is a petty tin, bitch. she could have at least waited until Allison dealt with her personal issues with her family and now with Billy.
Shayna, she says, I think Billy's the bitch of this episode. Short and sweet.
All right. Kevin says, the Carters, for sure. How dare they try to get custody of cool Aunt Jo's unborn child? And are they even Reed's parents or just a couple of ghosts from the 1940s? P.S. Yesterday, I was watching the 1976 classic, All the President's Men, and look who I found. And he posted a picture of Miss Carter, and she looks a little more stylish. She does. She's got her hair done.
Yeah,
up.
She looks good.
She looks less like a fucking demon.
And if it's 76, I mean, it was 20 years prior to this episode, so
yeah.
She's got time on her side. JoJo says that she wanted to agree with me, but
yeah.
Amanda was the biggest biatch of this episode. She is selfish, retorting to sneaky ways to get ahead of everyone, and it's flat out condescending. Amanda is that friend you should always stay away from but can't quite get rid of. Very well put, JoJo.
Charles says, the Carters all the way. Attempting to obtain custody of your grandchild in utero is a pretty bitchy thing to do. Who cares if Joe takes pointless pictures with ridiculous setups? I mean, really, just what sort of ad campaign needs a couple groping each other in a bed?
Great question. We tried to figure that out.
Unless Joe is just doing a full-on porn shoot now.
She might.
In which case, the Carters may have a case, but I digress.
But do they? Come on. There are people that work in porn that need jobs too. Who cares?
Yeah. You can shoot porn and have kids, right?
I agree.
Yeah. So that is what happened with last week's Bitch of the Week. And yeah, I mean, Carters were a bitch, but hey. I gotta pick one too, you know? So Jenny, you won. Who's this week?
This week, my bitch is Brittany. Swim fan, the thought, the woman from the sea. Brittany is the B of the week. Okay, so she's been hired by Palmer. Who knows? Is this an old romantic relationship? Not really fleshed out. All we know is that he has given her $50,000 to basically be a high-end sex worker, maybe. And so he needs her to just go in and get money out of the safety deposit box, and she refuses to do so. She's been given 50 grand. It's like, girl, just go do your job. And she's, if he is her employer, she is very disrespectful. She's at every turn just kind of giving him attitude. And then furthermore, I think this whole thing about how she's doing this long con on Jake only to murder him. She rigs Jake's boat with explosive under the guise of, oh, I need help. Please, my husband is abusing me. I mean, here's this guy, Jake, who is going out on a limb for her to try to save her life and keep her protected. And this is how she repays him. And then at the end, all of this was done and facilitated by Palmer. The plan is like being all worked out. He's ready to go. But instead of actually completing the job, she murders her boss.
Fucked up.
Crazy. She murdered somebody, guys. She killed Palmer. And then she's like, Jake, come on, come with me. And it's like, just because Jake says no, she's like, well, you still have to die. See you later. And blows him up anyway.
She's a cold-blooded bitch.
She's a bitch. She doesn't make good on her professional promises, and she's a murderer, so total bitch. Brittany.
All right. I'm going with Sydney Andrews. Sydney seriously gets out of the loony bin, and already she's back to her old tricks. She's over. All she used to do at Jane's place was sleep. She like overslept. She slept through her alarm on her first day of work. And then her sister, who was awesome and kind, is like, you know what, Sid, take the day, get sorted. You just left the nut house. I want you to come to work fresh. This is all court appointed. So just relax. And Sydney immediately takes this to go, I'm going to go back and try to fuck your ex-husband again. I'm going to try again. You know, the guy who catcalled me while I was stripping at the local strip joint. I'm going to try to fuck him again because he don't remember me. So now I'm going to call myself fucking Miranda. Here's the other part of her being a bitch. You are taking advantage of a man who has no idea who he is, what he does. He knows exactly what he does.
Dan, he knows everything.
He's a doctor. He has so much information about doctoring. But everything else, he has no clue. You just up and, like, interject yourself into his meditations. And you just sit on his balcony and make out with him while he has his groceries.
Knowing full well that he's in a committed relationship.
Exactly. Then you tried to fucking kill him. You helped try to kill him. And now you're trying to get after him. That is so fucking bitchy. Then you tell, like, he comes to your house. You try to entice him at the door. And you try to fuck in Jane's bedroom? Are you out your mind, you conniving bitch? You even used her scarf. Like, most people get mad if you borrow their jacket without asking. But you are using your sister's scarf to get tied up by her ex-husband so he can go bananas on your bod. Come on, man. That is a bitchy fucking thing to do. And then you're like, Jane, you gotta help me. You gotta help me. Oh, what happened, Sydney? Well, I was trying to fuck your ex-husband. But he tied me up. He tied me up and I'm a bitch. What time's work tomorrow? Like, you're a fucking bitch, dude. That is so bitchy. Oh, man. I could go on. But, I mean, what's a bitch if you're not lying, cheating, and misrepresenting yourself to people? It's fucked up, man. Sydney, you're a bitch.
Well, Dan, you've convinced me.
Thank you.
Good work.
So,
have you convinced the listeners?
That's what I'm trying. Come on, guys. I need your votes. I need your votes. And if you're on Twitter, too, like, That place is fair game. If you just vote on there, you're probably gonna your side's gonna win.
So go to Twitter, go to Facebook, vote, let us know what you think. If we miss somebody, you thought that maybe someone else should be a bitch, let us know. We'll talk about it on the next show.
A lot of people thought Billy this week, I guess. But yeah, so I will post that up when I remember on Tuesday. Every week I'm like, oh yeah, I gotta do bitch of the week. So with that out of the way, it's time to rename this bad boy. This one was called Grand Delusions. I don't get it. Who was grand and delusional?
I really can't think of anybody.
Yeah. I don't know either.
Having delusions of grandeur means like you, I don't know. I don't know who could fit that, like somebody that thinks that.
I'm googling grand delusions of grandeur.
Yeah, well, that basically means that, like,
a false impression of one's own importance.
Okay.
I don't know
who named these, but
It's probably the same person singing the songs.
Same person selecting the music.
Yeah. So we can do better. Jenny, what's your rename?
I'm renaming this One Eye Open because, you know, like you got to keep one eye open. You got to like keep a lookout on what's going on because.
Sleep with one eye open.
Okay.
Gripping your pillow tight, exit night.
Oh,
enter night. All right.
Okay, we should stop.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, guys.
This is not a singing podcast.
That was bad. Anyway, yeah, keep one eye open because we see that the retailer does it while he's Mickey L. Jane. One eye, guys.
Ew.
One eye. And then, like, that's literally. But figuratively, people got to keep their eyes open. They got to, I mean, Jake's got to be looking out for people like Brittany that's trying to scam him. Jane's got to be keeping an eye on her sis. She's up to her old tricks again. Michael's got to keep those eyes open because people try to kill him left and right.
Every day.
A lot of people keep one eye open. Don't go fully to sleep. You got to watch your back.
All right. I like it. My rename, I have ignored all the other storylines and just focused in on the most important thing that happened this episode. And my rename is, it has to be spoken. But my rename for this episode is, I'm back with a lot of A's.
Got it.
Because,
yep.
God damn it, I love Michael Mancini. He's back, and so now it's going to get really good. There's nothing better than an angry Michael.
A scheming Michael.
Yeah. Oh, and the scheme is on.
He's the best.
He's the man. So I'm back is mine.
Cool. Now, what do we think is going to happen in future episodes?
All right. Michael and Kimberly are just going to run around having like rough sex everywhere. Michael's going to go back to work and they're just going to bang all day everywhere. I think Chris and Sydney are definitely going to have hate sex. I think Jake lives, of course. And I think Allison is going to bring the bottle back in this episode. Mm-hmm. She knows where she stands at D&D, and she's like, well, I guess it doesn't fucking matter what I do. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to get blasted, get schwasty. And I think Billy and Amanda are definitely going to have sex at D&D, and Allison's going to see it.
Yeah, I am totally with you on that. I think that they're going to hook up, and this is going to be part of Amanda's plan on making Allison's life living hell. I don't even think that Amanda's into Billy at this time. It's only a device to make Allison's life terrible.
She's going to pop the blinds open and just like ride Billy. Like, Allison, can you come in here for a second? Allison, get in here with those papers. I can clearly see your fucking Billy at your desk. Get in here now.
I think the retailer is going to sexually harass Sydney and give unwanted advances toward her. And Jane's not going to believe her because she cried wolf too many times.
Yeah.
So I think she's going to be in a really bad place. I think Kimberly and Michael are going to a very toxic place, too. I think it's going to get real dark with them.
It's like going to throw on 9-inch nails and like fucking crow it out. You're going to have crow sex on like thunderstorms.
I think that Joe might get kidnapped by crazy fundamentalist Christian people that are like, we have to get this baby out of this devil woman.
Oh, God.
They may even try to cut the baby out of her. And I think we might see some crazy shit go down.
Seance.
Yeah, I think that
I
might
like
happen.
Yours.
Oh, thanks. I agree that Jake definitely jumped overboard at the last second and he somehow manages to live. And Matt, where the heck are you, man?
Yeah, where's
what's Matt? Going on?
I need the private eye back.
Yeah.
Poor Matt.
Well, hopefully he's got like a line in the next episode.
Yeah.
We'll see.
We'll see. Guys, we got two new patrons.
What?
Kristen and Charles. Thank you guys so much for contributing to the podcast. You jumped in at a very, very exciting time.
Yes, we have some fun, a fun little thing that we are going to start doing for our patrons.
I'll say this week we're going to drop a okay. really cool Patreon.
You want to tell them what thing. It is?
Nah.
No, let's tell it. Let's tell them.
All right, do it.
For our patrons, we are starting a new thing called On Location. And Dan and I are fortunate enough to live in the LA area. So we are going to make it our mission to go to as many film locations as we can where they have filmed Melrose Place.
That's right. We're shooting video. We're trying to meet people at the places to get them to tell us stuff about it. And if they saw anything, if they saw like people shooting.
Yeah, learn a little bit about the history of where these places are. The first little on-location video is that none other but the exterior shot of Melrose Place.
That's right, 4616.
We went there, guys. We saw it. And we actually met a tenant who lived there during the time that Melrose Place was filmed. Yeah. We have a quick little interview with her. And coincidentally, her name is Sandy.
Oh,
weird. I don't know. So if you guys want to see these little videos, all you have to do is be a Patreon patron. Mm-hmm. If you donate as little as $1 per month, you have access to these videos. And like we said before, we're going to try to bring you these videos periodically, and we're making it our mission to go to every location we can access.
And if Palmer's actually dead, you can expect a quickie episode about the life of Palmer Woodward on the show.
So yeah, if you want to contribute to the show, if you like what we're doing, you want to support us, contributing via Patreon really helps us to add little things like this and helps us to be more present in our social media groups and just keep this going. We're
just a little family trying to make it.
Trying to make it work in this in this crazy city called LA.
As always, get in our Facebook group. If you're only listening to the podcast, that's great. That's awesome. But there's a lot going on in our Melrose Place podcast Facebook group.
And we've learned some really cool stuff over this week.
Mike has posted that the guy in season 2, episode 24, who we called the troll and a parrot... Like, all right, remember when Allison and Joe went to, like, the morgue / police station, and they were like, we need to get Reed's
I'm Reed's personal sister, belongings. And, like, got the belongings, and that's the only credentials they needed?
Yeah, the guy they talked to who was like, well, Reed, Pauper's Grave, and I was like, Pauper's Grave. Mike fucking knows that guy.
And I kind of feel like we should apologize to him a little bit.
I mean, all right. Everything that I say on this podcast is in fun. It's in fun. Yeah. I don't hate Andrew Shue. I never hated Rhonda, Vanessa Williams, anybody who I don't think that the Carters are dead. and I don't think that Pauper's Grave guy is a parrot or a troll. But it's all for fun. It's all for fun. But apparently he graduated with Mike's parents from Whippany Park High School in New Jersey, and he played Arvid on Head of the Class. Do you remember Head of the Class?
No, I didn't watch it. Young.
His name is Dan Frischman, and even Mike still laughed hysterically as we made fun of this guy. And I wrote immediately, I sincerely apologize for anything bad I said. It's all in good fun. But yeah, maybe he wants to be on the podcast.
Maybe. We'd always have him on, so come on down.
Yeah, come on down. But just stuff like that. Like, so much going on.
Another cool thing that happened, Charles won an actual tile from the Melrose Place set.
It's so awesome.
On eBay. And it's really cool. It's like one of that, like the Spanish style, like painted tiles. And it's really beautiful. You recognize it immediately, like mm-hmm. seeing it. It's like, yep, I know exactly like where that is in the facade of the building. So that was just another cool little thing he shared with us. And he has pictures up there. So number one, congratulations. I mean, that's a really cool prop to walk away from. I know Dan is in props and costumes and stuff. So I'm sure he could tell you that that's a good find.
Hang on to it. Graham, he posted, hey, you guys, loving the podcast and rewatching all these classic Melrose moments. I thought that I would share with you this grand art piece, which sits on my office wall, reminding me every day that poor copy is a total killjoy. And it's a framed poster of the mantra, one bad ad can ruin your whole day.
And you'll remember Allison and Billy have that in their kitchen. Well, their dining room area.
Yeah, I love that. That is awesome.
Yeah, so just lots of activity, lots of fun stuff happening in our little group. So if you want to just continue this on, if one episode a week isn't enough for you and you want to keep in the Melrose Place world, mm-hmm. you can stay connected in our Facebook group.
One last one, which was such a cool theory from Nikki. She posted, she's a firm believer that Melrose Place was just a fuel-filled lust story that Billy was writing so that he could stop driving his cab. The series should have ended a la Roseanne or Newhart. Most of my thought process about this comes from the many women who tell Billy he is such a wonderful lover, which just could not be true.
And you know what? That's such a great point, because in this story too, Billy gets so much praise about his writing. Like, this was wonderful. Yeah. You are so talented. And if we go back to season one, and the stuff that he was writing then was supposed to be horrible.
And remember, he would ball it up and just throw it on the couch. And the whole couch is covered in paper.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. So, Nikki, that is such a great theory, and one that could make sense.
Fun stuff. Get in the group. Get in the group. So, we're on Facebook, obviously. We're on Twitter. We are on Instagram. Active on all of those. Follow us at Melrose Pod. And leave us a review. If you love the show, that's a really, really cool way to help us out. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. There's a link to that in our show notes. And you can always email us, melrosepod@gmail.com.
As always, guys, thank you so much for listening. We love smut.
And we love you.